It is time for Pet Files Ask the Vet. Underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. With us today, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner, chief vet, and anniversary specialist at the Millerton Veterinary Practice.
Yes, I was commenting on the beautiful pictures of the Cannons on Facebook that Vance posted.
Yeah,
thank you.
They've actually managed to stay married for a while.
We haven't managed to stay young, though.
Right.
Well, that comes next to us.
I think you've both done a great job.
I think you've done a superior job.
That's exactly right.
Well, thank you.
Not to mention the fact that your kids are interesting, too.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, so that could be worse.
That's true. It's the kids that have made us age.
Oh, no question. That being said, and the dogs and the cats.
Yeah.
But today's
it's
another
worth
day.
It.
I'll talk to you about that part later. All right. Tanya in Shelton. I'm thinking about getting a teacup pig as a pet. Apparently, they are supposed to be spayed or neutered. Is that something a regular vet can do, or do I have to find a farm-type vet? How do you find a farm-type vet? I mean, there's Google, but if you don't know any farmers, how are you supposed to know if the vet's any good?
I wouldn't look for a farm, someone who just does large animal to spay or neuter a pig. Well, just not to spay them. So we're talking about pet pigs, which are usually most of the time Vietnamese pot-bellied pigs, but apparently there are other breeds as well that are pretty small. But I don't think there's any pig that would fit in a teacup.
Yeah, I was curious about that. And if there is, yeah, I mean, and then there was that story, you know, out of the Bronx, which, you know, because different cultures, people really ought to understand that there are different cultures all at play simultaneously here is all I'm going to say about this.
Okay.
Hey, everybody, note for the day. All right, so how big is a teacup? This is a stupid...
Well, I don't know that there's really any such thing as a teacup pig, but because a pot-bellied pig will run 100 to 300 pounds, but I know that some of the breeders have been selecting for very small pigs. So, you know, a very small pot-bellied pig might be 20 to 40 pounds. Is that a teacup, really? I guess compared to a normal-sized pig, it would be. You know, otherwise, then they just nutritionally stunt them, or they sometimes will sell them as little weanling pigs, and people are unsuspecting that they're really going to get to it be 100 pounds. But in any case...
They're piglets.
Piglets, right.
All right. Teacup pigs. I'm just curious. I don't know very much about teacup pigs. Teacup pigs, baby pigs, pigs, puppies. Pigs,
you know, a teacup poodle is a very small dog, a very, very small dog, and they have bred them to be very small. I'm not sure that you can have a 4 or 5 pound. You can't have
you
a
can't.
4 or 5 pound pig.
No, these
so
are
20 to 40 pound pigs.
Right. I don't know whether or not this is true, but these are pot-bellied pigs who are either... not fed enough so that they stay small, or are called mini, and then what happens is, it grows to pig
right.
size.
Right, right. So, and I've never seen one even as small as 40 or 50 pounds. But
I have a
that
really good idea
anything.
For Tanya.
Well, what? What's that?
Get a regular, plan to get a pot-bellied pig, which will grow to 100, you know, a small one if you can. And let's ask the question, if you have a pot-bellied pig, you've got to get it spayed or neutered?
Yeah, so I would guess you're going to have to find somebody who does it. So there are people who like to take on these crazy things, and then they'll do it repeatedly. So it's not going to be easy to find. So maybe someone who's done some zoo medicine, maybe someone who's done exotic medicine, or, Google somebody who may have spayed a few pot-bellied pigs.
Yeah, the problem with Google, and I just really hate to sound really old here, but if you find someone, then you've actually got to call them and
you
know
have
how to
interview
talk to them.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
There's just no possibility that people are absolutely forthright and forthcoming. It's just impossible. So
right.
Just throw that out.
It may be on avma.org. You might be able to find someone. So the American Veterinary Medical Association, we do put specialties and interests on our forms. So avma.org. You know, I've never intubated a pig, but you need to have in order to spay an animal, you really need to have them intubated. Otherwise, the airway is not safe. And so, you know, you have to have special tubes. You need to know how to intubate a pig. And then the anatomy is fairly similar, but you need to know how to catheterize, you know, put an intravenous catheter in, too. So usually into the ear vein, which I haven't done in about 100 years. So it's not something that is something that a normal vet would do or that most normal veterinarians would do, but definitely not a farm-type vet because they're not going to have the facility to do that.
Right.
So you need a sterile room, a sterile surgery room.
Yeah, and again, Tanya and Shelton asked you, didn't ask me. But, you know... For example, I do know of a farm that has a wonderful it's a horse farm, an other farm, and it has they've got a pig as a pet, and the pig's terrific, but the pig gets to go in and out of the stalls and do pig things that, you know, I don't know that it's easy to do in your house.
Yeah, apparently you can house train them, but. And they're very intelligent, but I don't know.
And they're good, and you can put them on a harness, and they're really hilarious. But
right.
You just definitely need to have more than just your, like, wow, this would be a good idea. So we're going to move on to
yes, lots and lots of information on what you're getting into when you have any kind of exotic pet.
Right.
That's a really good advice.
Yeah.
And
And know that as seen on TV or as seen on Instagram or whatever isn't necessarily the same as seen in your kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Jake and Maddie in Great Barrington, our little girl got a pretty nasty scratch from a kitten yesterday. Besides that stupid rock song from the 70s.
Cat
sorry.
Scratch.
Yeah,
scratch
but that's the first thing I knew about it. So I stood there once going, am I going? Ted Nugent, what is cat scratch fever and should I be worried? We put hydrogen peroxide on the scratch right away, of course.
Cat scratch fever is Bartonellosis, so with a B, B-A-R-T-O-N. It's caused by Bartonella hensley, and it's carried by fleas most of the time. So I guess it can be carried by ticks as well. But most of the time it's flea-infested, you know, stray cats that might carry Bartonella. So those are the cats that's not a good idea to be going up and petting. I have to tell my children that all the time, even though they're grown up. It's not like, you know, these cats also can potentially expose yourself to rabies if you get bitten by one of those cats. So... it's possible that a house cat could have Bartonellosis. It is transmitted most commonly from kittens and oftentimes to children. And it is a bacterial infection. So cleaning out the wound is really important. But I would definitely, if this kitten is one that doesn't belong to anybody, then I would definitely check with your pediatrician and ask them what you should do as far as that goes. But, certainly children get scratched all the time by kittens when they get a new kitten. The most important thing, if this is your own kitten, is to make sure you have really good flea control. So,
right, assuming you do, just because I have also been, I'm not a child anymore, sadly, but I have been scratched a lot. And what I'm wondering is, I do put hydrogen peroxide on it, but then I have always found that different things work better. Yeah, you know, bacitracin works for some. Neosporin with the little pain relief works for me just like instantly. But different bodies do have different reactions, no? Just to a regular scratch.
To a regular scratch, yeah, yeah. But it's more of a, Bartonella is more of an issue, my understanding is, in immunocompromised people and animals. However, children, technically, I guess, can be classified in there, that they don't have fully developed immune systems. And so definitely this would be a question for the pediatrician. But Bartonellosis is, you know, if you've got someone's, this is a kitten living in someone's house, has come from another home, no fleas involved, probably not a big concern. So that would be translated to the doctor.
Right. And so what I'm just jumping to, excuse me.
And peroxide is not a super broad spectrum antibacterial.
So what would you do?
Yeah, something like betadine, prepadine, a surgical scrub. But washing out with water is a great idea. And then applying, if you apply bacitracin or Neosporin, then you get a little bit broader spectrum antibacterial.
Okay. Yeah,
but I can't tell you off the top of my head what kills Bartonella.
Yeah, no, and I'm definitely sticking with, okay, you've got, we don't even know how old, our little girl is, and we don't know where the kitten came from. So in terms of that question itself, it's like, yeah, call the pediatrician. But in terms of just your regular cat scratching you, which I think if you have a cat happens, you know, once a week.
Yeah, scrubbing it with soap and water and running it under the water and then applying some, you're right, antibacterial ointment on and a Band-Aid.
Right. Okay. And that just cleans up easier than if you leave it alone or if you I've found if you just put hydrogen peroxide on it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Ernesto in Queens, do you need to wash a dog bed? My wife says yes, but I don't like the way the hair gunks up the washing machine, so I say as long as Max doesn't have fleas, leave it alone. Max is a Frenchie, by the way.
You do need to wash a dog bed. If you don't wash a dog bed, then they get really, really stinky, and you'll have to throw them away, which is quite expensive. So I think that what I would suggest, though, is to get one of those hair rollers and the sticky ones, and get most of at least half the hair off the dog bed cover prior to washing it.
Yeah,
and that way you won't have so much trouble with the machine. And then what I do is I wash all the dog stuff and the cat stuff together, and then I run a clean the drum cycle in the washer before I wash our own stuff.
Right.
So you can get an extra cleaning to get the hair out of there. But if you don't wash it, you're going to have a really stinky dog.
It's really
bed.
Scuzzy.
Yeah, and it'll stink up the whole house.
Yeah, and you start wondering, that's an odd smell. After you've gone through the fridge and the pantry, you'll discover it's the dog bed.
Yeah, we don't have to do that very much for fleas anymore because we have the topicals and the flea control on a monthly basis. But just for the dog stink is a good idea.
Right, but plus dogs have, fur has oils and,
Yes, and the oil becomes rancid with time and then it gives off a bad odor.
And just in terms of removing hair, one of the things that works really easily on top of a lint roller is just take a sponge or a paper towel or something, just put a little bit, dampen it, and that breaks the static of the hair. So you can just basically rub the sponge the way that you would a roller on the blanket or whatever, and up comes much of the hair. So,
good idea.
Just another household hint. All right. Fern in New Preston, I adopted a ragdoll cat who's almost 16 years old. Sometimes she wheezes. I've read that they're susceptible to pneumonia, so can you tell me what to keep an eye out for? And should I keep her away from the air conditioner? She's got so much fur, she must get horribly hot in this weather. But given her age, I worry the cold air is bad for her lungs. I feel caught between a rock and a hard place about that. Can you help?
In general, I think that a cat who wheezes occasionally... So this is a little tricky without seeing the cat. So a 16-year-old cat who just started to wheeze definitely needs to go to the vet. A kitty who's been wheezing forever, just occasionally, and doesn't have a diagnosis of asthma, may be obese. If that's not the case, I'm not really sure why. Wheezing from the lower respiratory tract is not a good sign.
Okay, well, one second.
Yes.
Because I don't know that everyone is aware of the difference between a wheeze and a throat clear, in cat sound, because this is life. You don't know. What's a wheeze?
Right. So my understanding, what I can say is most of the time when people say their cats are wheezing, it's because they have upper respiratory congestion. So it's a little air coming through the nostrils, and it makes a little squeaky noise.
Right.
But if it's coming from the chest, then it means that there's bronchoconstriction or constriction of the airways, and that can be a real problem. It can be suddenly an acute problem. But that's a problem that air conditioning usually helps. So, if she actually has some trouble breathing, maybe through her upper airways where she's wheezing, then sometimes the air conditioning can help her to breathe better. You know, it's always more difficult to deal with allergies or frequently if you're not in the air conditioning. It's more humid and there's more pollens and things in the air. But on the other hand, a 16-year-old cat is often thin and deficient and gets cold really easily. So it's a little bit of a tricky question. So the best thing to do is let her choose where she wants to be so that she's not in line with a blowing fan or air conditioner, and let her have a place where she can get away from, where she can get a little bit warmer if it is too cold for her.
Or you also, if you put your air conditioner on and if you use there's certain cleaning fluids that constrict the cats just like they do human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Could they cause a cat? Because I have a cat that wheezes every time. We had to change the floor cleaner.
Yes, aerosolized. Yeah, and they all do it to me.
Right.
So
and they're doing it to me right now. So
they all do it to me, and I have to run outside because I really can't get a good breath. That's a really good point. So you need to think about that. It's possible if she's sometimes wheezing that it's in response to a cleaner of some kind that's been aerosolized. So that to think about, too. But it may just be coming from her nose. She may have chronic rhinitis, meaning the turbinates in the nose itself are chronically inflamed. Maybe a chronic sinus infection. So you watch for nasal discharge, sneezing, increased respiratory rate. So when she's lying still, you can see her breathing is more pronounced, and that's a problem that she needs to see the veterinarian for. Because if it is allergic, lots of things that can be done. Diet change, simple things sometimes, nasal drops, saline nasal drops. So it would be worthwhile to discuss with a veterinarian unless you already have a diagnosis.
Right, and I'm going to say if you've got a cat who's almost 16 and doing reasonably well, it's probably worth a vet visit just anyway.
And probiotics.
Yeah.
So probiotics is a great thing to support her immune system.
So. All right. Shailene in Torrington, my fiancé got me a Chinese crested puppy for Christmas this year. Love the pup to pieces, but how am I supposed to keep her from getting sunburned this summer? She's 7 months old.
Make a sunscreen shirt. So there's that wonderful sunscreen material now that people wear at the beach with the long sleeves. And maybe they do that. Maybe they make them for dogs without hair. I'm not sure. But if they don't, you could certainly buy a shirt from L.L. Bean or someplace and have someone devise a shirt that will go over the top of your dog so they won't be so hot won't get that burn across the top of the back. But you do have to watch the bridge of the nose. You can get some children's sunscreen and put it on the areas that will be exposed to the sun where she can't reach to lick it. So you don't want your dog ingesting sunscreen, but you can apply some safe children's sunscreen to the tips of the ears. If you put it on the bridge of the nose, then
they'll be licking it. How do you get it off? How do you get it off?
You wipe it off with a warm water on a paper towel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just don't forget to two things. Don't forget the dog's that tongue can reach places that you wouldn't necessarily think. And if you do, I think the shirts, the little shirtlet's a great idea. But if you you can get a little belt and everything. But if you go with the sunscreen, make sure you wipe it off after.
Yeah. And you do have to watch the top of the tail and top of the head, although there's a little bit of hair there.
Yeah, it's the
top
part.
Of the neck type of thing. And mostly stay out of the sun. You know, you're not going to be bringing this dog to the beach.
You'd be surprised.
Even with the beach shirt.
All right, Zach in Portland, Maine, my lab mix keeps chewing between his front toes on one paw. I can't see any burrs, glass, stuck chewing gum ticks. In other words, I can't see anything wrong. He's not limping and seems fine in every way. Can they get a burn or a scratch? And if so, will it go away probably on its own?
So typically you would see a burn. So if your dog has a burn, and if you're talking about the bottom of the foot, then you can usually see some redness there.
I think he's talking about, you know, that little tricky place in between.
If it's in between on the top, then there's either potentially an interdigital cyst there, or, excuse me, and sometimes they can go away on their own, or you have an allergic dog. Most of the time it is an allergy, or the feet have been wet constantly and you've got a yeast infection. So if you don't see anything, if you don't see gooey red skin, then it's possible that there's too much hair for you to actually appreciate that, or that your dog has allergies. So atopic dermatitis, which has to do with skin allergies, so it's inhaled allergens or topical allergens that are causing a skin reaction. Sometimes you won't see any lesions, but they get very itchy on the feet and the face. So that's something that needs to be addressed. Antihistamines only work in about 20% of dogs. You have to have the right dose of an antihistamine. So, you know, you can use diphenhydramine, which is Benadryl. You have to be careful not to get the Benadryl that has the cold medicine in it. And you can use a milligram per pound of Benadryl. So if you're a 25-pound dog, you can use 25 milligram Benadryl twice a day. But I don't have great success with antihistamines. So it may be something that... Oh, you can also rinse the feet with cool water if you're not seeing any lesions there. At the end of the day, you know, the grass pollens, tree pollens, et cetera. So take those feet, put your dog right in the bathtub and soak the feet or rinse them for a few minutes and dry them off. That sometimes helps. And you may need to see the vet for some medication for that or talk about diet change, low starch diets.
And, you know, once again, When something is happening consistently that's outside of the norm, and obviously we will continue to answer questions on this show, but if you keep seeing it and you don't know the answer, chances are best thing for you to do other than ask is to make an appointment, because it's going to be that much easier to treat at the beginning than after it's gone on for ages and ages and ages.
And definitely ask, what are some things I can do? What are some natural things that I can do, if you're willing to do it, to help prevent this or at least lessen the amount of medication that's needed?
Right.
If you're willing to do things like wash your dog's feet, you know, that can take away potentially a third of the inflammation. And you're going to lessen the amount of medication that you need to deal with.
Right, which is obviously the plan. And if you are washing your dog's feet once again in the summer, don't forget to dry them. And thank you very much, Dr. Cannon.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
This has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com.